There is a phrase, a saying, misery loves company. I don't know if you've ever really reflected or thought about the real meaning of that term. I did some research on it. I found out it's not modern, it's not new. The best that they can do in tracing it, it goes all the way back into ancient Greece and in some of the philosophers. It's the idea that as human beings, misery loves company. Yeah, but what does that mean? It isn't that having company with us or individuals who are suffering like we're suffering somehow eases our burden. When I look at people who are suffering, significantly suffering, all of those pictures on the news or some of the groups that are trying to help impoverished people, and we look at individuals who are suffering, it pulls on our emotions to see the poverty, the disease, the things, the problems that people are facing. And you don't find that that group is congratulating one another because they're in a great company of fellow sufferers. No, in reality, when we look at that idea of misery loves company, it really is a reflection of something of our sinful heart. What it really is talking about is the fact that when we're miserable, when we're suffering, we don't want people to be having things going well for them, or for them to be happy, or for them to have what we don't have. We'd really rather have them suffering like us. We tend to have the feeling that when we go through situations that are difficult to face, it's not fair. It's not right. Why is this happening to me? And yet, in our human pilgrimage, things that don't seem to be right, don't seem to be fair, that really pull at our emotions when either we go through it or we see others go through it, are the realities that all human beings face. And as Solomon addresses that very fundamental, important question for every person sitting here and for every human being, where is it you're going to find satisfaction? Where is it you're going to find meaning and purpose and fulfillment in life? Are you going to find it in the things that are temporal? For so many individuals, they think, if I could just embrace the American dream. And yet in reality, for many individuals, the American dream is nothing more than an American nightmare. Now, we ignore that part of America. There's parts of the city we don't want to go into. There's people who are living in almost cardboard houses, who don't have the possessions and the wealth that other individuals might have. And the pursuit of the American dream becomes something of a mocking joke to them. One of the things that impacts individuals when they go on the mission field is often to be struck right in the face with human tragedy, with human poverty, with human suffering, with human disease. And the reality is such that people come back and they're very much more appreciative of what we have in our own country, or many of us may have. So prevalent is the idea of human suffering that there's actually been research done, and things have been put together in what they call the World's Misery Index. And when you look at the World's Misery Index, there are certain countries that they can't even get the data on that are below what they even find to be the worst of all the nations in which people are suffering. You and I can be very grateful that we live in a country, according to the World's Misery Index, we're number 14. In other words, there's 13 countries that suffer less than we suffer in the United States of America. Now, we think of taking trips to different places, but I wonder how many of you ever said, you know, I would really like to go to Syria. I'd really like to have a live my life in Jamaica, in Haiti. Because we're looking at the misery index of individuals in those countries that are way down into the hundreds in comparison to other nations. What impressed me is when I looked at them, some of the worst aren't the Irans, the Iraqs, the Afghanistans, but countries in Central America, countries in South America. Sometimes even places we like to go to enjoy the coast, when in reality the general population is really suffering. Another barometer that is being done looks at individuals who live in types of denial of human rights, of an oppressive form of dictatorial government. And the worst on the scale would obviously be the Chad, Tibet, Cuba, China, Somalia, North Korea, and again Syria. Those are realities. Where is finding fulfillment, satisfaction for the people who live in either those miserable environments or the oppressive environments that they face? We see it on the news, and they change the stories so fast that we don't even have the time to become emotionally involved in what's happening to the majority of the world's population. But the reality is, it's happening to people. It may occur to some of us. We have no guarantees, only of what God's given us today. And so if you're looking for satisfaction and fulfillment and meaning in life, where are you to find it? I'd like you to turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and listen to what Solomon states, where Solomon says in verse 1, I looked again at all the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun, and behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort. And on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort. So I congratulated the dead who are dead already, more than the living who are still living. But better than both of them is the one who has never existed, who has never seen the evil activity which is done under the sun. We know in this book, Solomon is telling us, if you're looking to find your happiness, your sense of well-being, your meaning, your purpose in life, in any of the things that this world can offer, in any of the endeavors that man can pursue, you're going to be brought up empty. And as he develops this theme, he not only shows the foolishness of individuals who try to find their fulfillment in pursuing knowledge, who try to find their fulfillment in partying all the time, who try to find their fulfillment in their jobs, etc. He also deals with the reality of how life really is. And in chapter 3, now moving into chapter 4, you notice he says, I looked again. So he isn't changing his theme. He is looking at the reality of God making everything appropriate in its time. He is looking at the reality that God has a purpose for every event that happens in the heavens. He is looking at the reality that man cannot change God's providential working in the world. And he is including in that reality the fact that man has ways to pervert justice, and yet God is the one who is still accomplishing his purpose. And as Solomon analyzes reality and life as it really is, he says one of the greatest miscarriages of injustice has to do with the acts of oppression that are taking place in this world. And what really grips Solomon's heart was the fact that when he looked at the acts of oppression that were taking place, all that he could see in these acts of oppression was the suffering and the sorrow of the individuals who were being oppressed. And as he looked at those acts of oppression, he recognized that it was a display of man's cruelty to his fellow man. Now, we so often think of looking at circumstances where people abuse animals and how inhumane man can be. And man still has to deal with the idea that when you think about man dealing with his fellow man, man can be very cruel. On the personal level, it can be in our school situation, it could be in the workplace, we think of the bully. And we say there's no place for the bully. But the bully is the one who by his force or his power, be it an individual or be it a nation, is seeking to suppress, to dominate, to control another individual or another being. And when you look at the way in which this individual works, he does it by fear and intimidation. I found an expression of that reality in one of the articles that I read, and the author said, "Subjection requires vigilance. If you relax your brutality even for a moment, the people you are oppressing will revolt at the first sign of weakness." And so how is it, you know, if we make it very relevant for today, that ISIS is expressing its dominance, its oppression? It's through intimidation. It's through fear. It's through cruel expressions of human force to dominate others. Unless we begin to look at them and see other individuals as different and distinct, there is no people group on the earth that has not either been the oppressor or the oppressed. We can look at what happened in Germany. We can look at what happened in the United States of America and all of our expansion of territory. And we can look at the trail of tears of Native Americans as they were forced out of their locations because we believed we were superior. We can look at what was done with the slavery that took place of individuals from Africa or other countries, and how they were oppressed and dominated by other people groups. And Solomon said, "I looked at what's happening to human beings and I recognize in that reality there is no comfort, there is no relief from the cruelty that one people group expresses upon another." When you think of the, you know, schoolyard bully, when he gets the people, the individual down and is dominating, he doesn't turn around and say, "Well, let me help you up," but he rather would kick the individual when he's down. There's no comfort that comes from the individual that is oppressing or expressing his power over another. Another individual said, when you think about the way in which one individual dominates another, you can't always think of it in the expression of, you know, terror or of brute force. In an anti-war speech in 1918, in our own country, Eugene Debs said, "In every age, it has been the tyrant, the oppressor, and the exploiter who has wrapped himself in the cloak of patriotism or religion or both to deceive and overawe the people." In every age, and it isn't any different in today's age. And the part of the problem, or maybe the crux of the problem, has nothing to do with the individual and his circumstance, but rather the individual and what is true in his condition. Existentialism became a very dominant philosophy because people couldn't cope with what they were seeing happening in the world. back in the 60s, even into the 70s. And I thought a man by the name of Albert Camus made a very astute observation about himself that really links to what the Bible would say about each one of us. He says, "The truth is that every intelligent man, as you know, dreams of being a gangster or of ruling over society by force alone. As it is not so easy as the detective novels might lead us to believe, one generally relies on politics and joins the cruelest party. What does it matter, after all, if by humiliating one's mind, one succeeds in dominating everyone? I discovered in myself sweet dreams of oppression." Now, you're going to tell me that's not true of you. That in the history of your life, there's never been a time when you wanted to get back at, pay back to, dominate over someone else. And what Solomon is recognizing here is that there is a cruelty of man in his sin. And there are acts of oppression that are being done in the world that are really just the reflection of what is the condition of the human heart. And as Solomon continues to reflect upon that reality, he also says that what is so startling in it all is there's no comfort. There's no comfort for those who are oppressed, and in the same way, there is no comfort for those who oppress. Just realized how this was brought to light in an event that happened in Iraq. Or maybe it was in Syria. I take that back now. I'm drawing a blank on the city. But the ISIS troops were defeated. And so how did the hierarchy in ISIS repay those troops that were defeated? They put them all to death. As a warning to all the rest who were the members of ISIS of how cowardliness, how failure is rewarded by those in power. One of the hardest things that some of our American troops have ever had to deal with, as they've been in other places, is the suicide bombers. And in particular, children to whom explosive devices were strapped so that they would come into the crowd or among the soldiers, and then it would be detonated by one of the ISIS leaders. There's no comfort. Man is calloused in his sin. And he can give expressions of, "I feel your pain," but there's no way to alleviate the problem. And if your worldview is so Pollyannic in its outlook, that you fail to appreciate the fact that if I am thinking things in the sin-cursed world can provide me with any lasting comfort, meaning, and satisfaction, then you do not understand your great need, your depravity in sin, and the need to be delivered from it. And while Solomon analyzed what was happening on the world scene, when he saw these acts of oppression that were taking place, and there was no genuine concern for the well-being of others, and looking for ways to help and alleviate the suffering, he said, "So I congratulated those who were dead already, rather than the living, who still have to go through all of the afflictions, the traumas, and the difficulties that people face in life." And then he says even more than that, "Better off than both of them is the person who has never seen, he's never existed, has never seen that is, has never experienced the injustices, the cruelties, the suffering, the issues, the problems that people face in life. Now, the first thing I want to say is this is not an expression of pessimism. This is not a cynical statement. This is Solomon looking at the reality of human oppression, of human suffering, and realizing just how evil and hard life really is. This is Solomon being moved with compassion to want to see people to be delivered from and not have to experience the evils that take place in this world. Sadly, far too often individuals read this and say, well, this is coming from the mouth of an individual that doesn't have an eternal perspective. This is coming from an individual who is just looking at things, you know, from a humanistic, from a man view of life, and not given the benefit of divine revelation. Nothing could be farther from the truth. You and I recognize all too well that as Christian people, we are genuinely at times just overwhelmed with grief. We are moved when we see the plight of individuals in their suffering. And what we are brought to understand is, no matter how well-intended any individual's efforts might be to help correct the problem, we can't do anything about it. I don't care how many political organizations are formed, how many relief efforts are being done, how many treaties are signed, and we listen to some political figure say, well, now the world is a much safer place. The reality is, it isn't. And man will never solve man's cruelty and problem. You and I live in a culture and a society where we believe in the goodness of man. You and I live in a culture and a society where we think there are just a few bad apples in this whole culture and the rest are all good. And the reality is there is none good. No, not one. And it is only God in His restraining grace that keeps individuals from doing the dirty, dastardly, destructive, cruel deeds that encompass the human heart. And when God pulls back that hand of restraint, we will see even greater expressions of human cruelty to one's fellow man. And as individuals go through those acts of suffering, just as been historically true in different populations and generations, as individuals suffer, they will find the reality of the philosophy of social Darwinism that says, you know, it's only the survival of the fittest that really is what matters. And we can take the life of another, we can become cannibalistic. If we don't have enough food for it to go around everyone, as long as I get my portion, I don't care about the rest. What's the problem? The human heart. And Solomon says here, the person that is to be congratulated more than any other is the non-person, the one who has never existed. Even Jesus said something like that. Does that startle you? He said, the Son of Man, Matthew chapter 26. Matthew 26. So the Son of Man is to go the way that's ordained from Him and to be betrayed by that one close to Him. It would be better for that man that he had never been born. Do you understand how gracious God's been to you? Do you recognize that you are Judas if it wasn't for the grace of God? How about the Antichrist? Would it be better he never existed? He may have power for a moment, but then everlasting damnation and punishment. And you recognize that the potter has the right over the clay, and you could be the Antichrist if it so displeased him? Who causes you to differ from someone else? And what I need to recognize is God has made me the way he's made me, and he will use me the way he has desired to use me, and he will fulfill and he will accomplish his purpose for me. And for certain human beings who were made by him to be vessels appointed for wrath, it would be better to have never existed than to go through this world and suffer injustices, oppression, with no one to aid them, with no relief given to them, to die of poverty or hunger or disease or famine, to never see the quote-unquote good life that we can have in this world, and then pass on into a Christless eternity to be the objects of divine wrath. How is it that you have a blessed hope? When you look at this sin-cursed world and the expressions of human wickedness, are you amazed that others can be so cruel? Or are you humbled to understand that if God had not changed my heart, if God had not been pleased in his grace to make me a new creature in Christ, that's me. That's me. And if I'm one of those individuals that is the oppressor and the expression of human cruelty to others, and my sins are never forgiven, if I am one of those that has been oppressed by others and never have any relief from the suffering that I experience in this life, and when I die, I pass on into the eternal punishment that awaits those outside of Christ, can't you understand why Solomon would say it's better that that person had never existed? That he didn't experience all of the sorrow and the heartache that one finds in this world. Instead, it's a recognition that the only place to find comfort, meaning, satisfaction, fulfillment, and purpose in life is in the Lord. And if you are so foolish to still think you're going to have the good life and that's what will give you meaning to life, and you ignore and neglect the Lord, you're of all most to be pitied. Because you've heard the truth. The beauty of biblical Christianity is God deals with reality. We live in a sin-cursed world. And what is most common is man's expressions of his sinfulness. And every once in a while we see a good story of someone in God's common grace seeking to benefit others who are afflicted. But that's not the general condition of things. The reality is that apart from God's grace, there's no hope for any one of us. And that's why when Solomon said, instead of putting your eyes on the temporal things and wanting to find fulfillment there, instead of being an individual that as he analyzes and looks at all that is going on and ending up like one of the greatest world thinkers, Leonardo da Vinci, when you looked at all of man's problems and end your life in despair and despondency, recognize that God's design in what he is doing in all of these things is that men might fear him. And the wise course of action is for you to turn your eyes on Jesus, to look at the only one who can give you the forgiveness of sins and who can provide you with meaning and satisfaction in a world that is still under a curse and man is expressing his sinful and cruel design and desires. Find your fulfillment, find your joy, find your satisfaction in him. And to recognize that whatever it is you have today, you have it for only one reason, the goodness and the grace of God. And don't live your life so foolishly thinking about, boy, what I'm going to do tomorrow. The only thing you know is you have today. And in this day, I focus on him. In this day, I look to him to provide me with meaning and joy and fulfillment. And I express in humble gratitude the blessings that are mine. First, for sins forgiven, that he was so kind to make me a vessel appointed for glory, rather than when the potter took that clay and made me the vessel appointed for wrath, and that what he has given me this day is what he has designed for my best good. Misery loves company. We live in a miserable, cruel world. And the only way in which we find any perverted sense of, a personal benefit is when we don't think anybody else has it better than we have it. We want them all to suffer like we do. But the reality is, God's people have something this world can never give. And God's people have something this world can never take away. And that is the true eternal riches that are found in Jesus Christ. And even when God's people go through the times of suffering and oppression and the difficulties in life, it is to recognize that there is absolutely no one or nothing that will ever separate the people of God from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus the Lord. And the Lord who gave the greatest of all sacrifices for our good is the one who will not withhold any good thing to those who are his children. Isn't it a blessing to be a child of God? And do you understand, you're not a child of God because you sought it, you deserved it, because you merited it. You were dead in your sin. You walked according to the prince of the power of the air. You were a child of wrath, even as the rest. But God, who is rich in mercy, even when you were dead, made you alive. And when you see the heartless expressions of cruelty and callousness that one human being or a group of human beings can do to another, understand that that's you. If it wasn't for the work of grace, thanks be to God for that wonderful gift of salvation in Jesus Christ, our Lord.